It's 6 past 12 and 78 degrees in Santa Fe as At Noon continues from KSFR News on Friday, June 21st. Coming at this hour, fire danger lurking in the Santa Fe area. It may not be new, but some dentists are using hypnosis to help their patients get through their dental work. We'll hear from one who uses it in Santa Fe. A new collection allows more people to have more access to the works of the late Santa Fe writer Tony Hillerman. We'll have a report. I'm Bill Dupuy, back with those stories, 60 Seconds with Christopher Hagan, and more after we check headlines. The latest report on the Horoso fire burning east of Espanola puts it at 3,900 acres. That's just 400 acres more than several days ago. It's inaccessible by road or by foot, so it's being monitored by helicopter. Containment is still at zero. The Thompson Ridge fire in the Hemis has not grown at all over the past week. It stands at 24,000 acres and is 90% contained. Managers at the Santa Fe National Forest have decided to take no chances with the potential of a human-caused fire. They're closing the entire forest to the public beginning Monday morning. Denise Ottaviano at Forest Headquarters says conditions are bone dry.
Right now, because of the extremely dry conditions and extreme weather we're experiencing, very hot, very dry, virtually no humidity, red flag warnings, and because of all of the current fire activity and new fire starts we're experiencing every day, we're going to have a significant amount of continuous rainfall to significantly reduce the chances of a wildfire starting.
She says the Valles Caldera is also closed to the public Monday. The Hyde Memorial State Park north of Santa Fe will close as well. But as the New Mexican reports, the city of Santa Fe's Dale Ball Urban Trails will remain open. It appears the legal Tender restaurant could be back in business before long. Operators have been given the go-ahead by a Santa Fe judge who held a hearing on the dispute between the restaurant and the Lamy Museum. The museum had ordered the legal Tender to close at the end of May, but the judge at yesterday's hearing ruled that operations can continue, at least until a full trial is held over the issue. A Texas newspaper is reporting that the Lone Star State has allocated $5 million in its budget for the coming fiscal year to battle New Mexico over water. Texas has already filed a lawsuit with the U.S. Supreme Court over the question of whether it's getting its share of water under a compact between the two states. But the high court has not yet decided whether it will take this particular case. The Texas Tribune also reports that Texas has hired a California lawyer who's an expert in water issues to handle it. The Albuquerque Water Authority is getting serious about conservation. They're offering customers a 50% reduction in their water bills for using less than 5,000 gallons a month. Customers who use more will see a 5% increase in their bills. Democrats and Republicans in the U.S. Senate appear to be reaching agreement on the hotly debated immigration bill. Support is growing for a bill that includes more border fencing and more border guards. Senator Tom Udall of New Mexico says the path to citizenship for immigrants also makes financial sense.
This bill is a historic moment for families, for our security, and it will benefit our economy. As the nonpartisan Congressional Budget Office just reported, this bill would reduce our deficit by $197 billion over the first 10 years and by at least $700 billion in the second decade.
The Loveless Respiratory Research Institute in Albuquerque has gotten a large grant of nearly $1 million to research the health effects caused by using wood-burning cooking stoves. According to today's Albuquerque Business First, the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation gave the grant in response to a World Health Organization conclusion that indoor air pollution from combustion is one of the top health disparities in the developing world. In weather for Santa Fe, more of the same, dry and hot with highs in the 90s. Right now, 79 degrees in Santa Fe. More in a minute.
Not a fan of on-air fun drives? Well, your donation now to KSFR's silent fundraiser can help us avoid an on-air summer drive. If we can make our goal by June 30th, we'll go right on through to the fall without interrupting programming. And everyone who donates will be eligible for a drawing for an Apple iPad and other great prizes from the New Mexico Jazz Festival, Santa Fe Opera, and The Screen. For details or to donate, visit our website, ksfr.org, or call us at 428-1527. That's 428-1527.
Stocks on Wall Street just can't seem to stay above water. Everything is down after several days of double percentage points losses. The Dow is off 13 points at 14,745. 12:12 on at noon from KSFR News. For many people, a visit to the dentist is fraught with anxiety and fear. But more and more, dentists are relying on hypnosis to help take the edge off the visit. One of them is Dr. Leslie LeKind here in Santa Fe. He uses hypnosis in his practice, and I asked him to explain more about it.
From my perspective, hypnosis is helping a person get relaxed enough to accept some things that they might not ordinarily accept, but that they would be comfortable accepting in the right circumstances. In other words, you can't get someone to accept something that's totally contrary to their belief system, but you can help someone access areas that they do believe in, but maybe either too reluctant or too shy or too blocked to access. But specifically in dentistry, and then there's a whole lot that can be said about hypnosis and stage hypnosis and making people quack like a duck and all that. But in dentistry, it really comes down to helping people just relax more and helping them breathe and just knowing that they're in a comfortable, safe environment.
How does it work? Does it target pain or anxiety or both?
Yeah, you can target pain. You can help someone if they are anxious about the procedure and they don't want to have anesthetic and they want to try to get through it. You can certainly help them elevate their pain threshold. It's more challenging. It's not for everybody, but it can be done, and it can be done very well and very impressively. But typically, in this day and age, that's not what we use it for, and probably not what most dentists use it for. I think most dentists use it just to allay anxiety.
Is it an everyday tool you use?
I don't do what's called formal inductions. A formal induction is it takes a little while. It helps, you might, there's some classic formal inductions like the descending staircase where you ask people to go down one step at a time. There's 10 steps, and each step you get more and more relaxed. You might do it by, there's a way of going through each part of the body and saying now your legs are getting relaxed, now your hips are getting relaxed, et cetera. But I rarely find the need to do that. I mostly do it when I'm helping people relax and get comfortable, usually before anesthesia. Almost everybody uses anesthesia, although a few of our patients don't. But there's a lot of anxiety about just getting the anesthesia, around getting the shot. And so I can help people I'm sure I do it every single time. I'm sure that every time I give an injection, my voice slows a little bit. I hesitate a little bit. I tell people to relax a little bit. I tell them to concentrate on their breathing a little bit. And before you know it, if you just kind of slip into that kind of routine, people start just chilling, And so I probably do it every single day. I probably do it, 20 times a day.
Nitrous oxide is what we call laughing gas. Do you use that with or in lieu of hypnosis?
I'm of the all-of-the-above approach. We do everything we can to make people comfortable. We have teddy bears, we have nitrous oxide, we have topical, we have mini massagers that we put on their jaw before we make them numb. We have music on earphones. That's just right in there. And then we do, of course, things all around the office as well, but just specifically around dental, the actual treatment at that moment. So, we do everything, and some people don't want nitrous. Some people don't want topical. Some people don't want anesthetic. Some people don't want music, but some people do. So we try to key into what might work for that person. But still, regardless of what we're going to do, regardless of whether we use nitrous or not, whether we use music or not, I'm still going to take a minute to just, you know, get people relaxed before we start.
Any downside or potential side effects from hypnosis?
There's a lot of, or there used to be, maybe there isn't anymore, but there used to be a lot of hype around hypnosis, you know, the magician who gets the person to go on the stage and take their clothes off or something like that. But in reality, it's just helping people relax. Now, I suspect that a particularly talented person could probably use hypnosis to manipulate someone, or at least try. And if that person is in a place where they are, again, willing to accept that manipulation, then it probably could be done. But that's done to us all day, every day, with all of the marketing and advertising that goes all around us, as people trying to, you know, manipulate us. So, but it, certainly in a dental context, if there's zero, especially with someone who's trained, you know, one thing you want to do when you're done, if you're going to do a formal induction, is you want to make sure that the person is formally brought out of that induction. You know, you tell them that they're breathing a little more rapidly now, that they're starting to become aware of their surroundings, that they're going to have a nice day, that when they wake up, they're going to be blah, blah, blah. And so that's, you know, that's important, although not really critical. If you don't do that, it's not like they're going to sleepwalk all day and, you know, have a car accident or something like that. So there's not really much downside that I can think of.
Santa Fe dentist, Dr. Leslie DeKind. 1217, I'm at noon. The late Tony Hillerman is best known as a mystery writer who focused on justice issues on the Navajo Nation. He was not only a prolific writer, he was a good educator. Now, thanks to a donation from Hillerman, his works are available as a teaching tool for all. KSFR's Charles Maynard has that story.
The Turquoise Mountain. It's the home of Turquoise Girl and also of Yellow Corn Boy. And it was built by one of their great mythical figures named First Man, and he pinned it to the earth with a stone knife to keep it from flying away, and he assigned some of the spirits to live there.
The late Tony Hillerman is best known for his book series about law enforcement on the Navajo Nation. Now, thanks to a generous gift from the author, students and others can get an inside look at the creative writing process. Kevin Comerford is a digital initiative librarian at the University of New Mexico.
Tony Hillerman he's not only a well-known author, but he was an educator here at University of New Mexico, and he chaired the journalism department for many years. And during that time, he was also writing his novels. Beginning in about 1989 or so, he started informally bringing his personal papers and his manuscripts to the library here. We got a donation agreement from him, a formal donation agreement, in 2005. And he donated his papers to the library with the understanding that we should use them for an educational purpose. In fact, we have a great email trail from 1989 where one of the archivists is actually asking the English department if they'd please send their students over because Tony Hillerman wants them to use his manuscripts to learn about the creative process and writing and see how authors work and the editorial process and so forth. We have all of the manuscripts from the novels, the original manuscripts, and there are about four or five drafts of each. And we've digitized those, and then we've put them online on the Tony Hillerman portal website, which the URL is ehillerman.unm.edu. And these manuscripts are now open to the public for viewing, and you can see each draft as it progresses through the creative and editorial process of his work. This is a permanent commitment by the university libraries to make his work available to the world, and it'll be actually growing over the next 2 years. We'll be adding more content to the portal site, including literary reviews of his work and scholarly articles, and basically making it the most comprehensive information resource about Tony Hillerman's work that's available, and it'll all be online and all in one place for anybody who wants to use it.
As mentioned, the manuscripts will be used by professors at the university as a teaching tool.
We actually have one of the professors in English right now, Daniel Warden, is on the advisory committee for the portal, and he's helping us promote the portal to the English department, the creative writing program here. We also have the chair of the journalism department is on the advisory groups. So we've got a number of the faculty here at the university who are involved in the portal project and are promoting the use of the portal to students and other faculty.
Kevin Comerford with the University of New Mexico.
We have a variety of information resources about Tony Hillerman. So we have for each novel and each, and coming soon, for each nonfiction work that he wrote, we have a synopsis about the work. We have a record of each of the American and foreign editions that was published about the work. You can also, from the website, you can find out what libraries and what booksellers online carry his work. So if you find a particular novel you're interested in, you can find out what libraries nearby have it in their collection or where you can go to purchase it online.
For KSFR News, I'm Charles Maynard.
His name was on every front page more than a decade ago. Now, as Roger Hearing reports, his name is coming up again.
Well, bankers and finance houses came in for a lot of flack after the crash of 2008, of course. But you have to cast your mind back a little further to 2001 to find what's still probably the biggest financial scandal of the century so far, Enron. Investors claimed $40 billion of losses from the collapse of shares in the energy trading company. And in 2006, the former chief executive, Jeffrey Skilling, was sent to prison for 24 years. Today he's expected to get his sentence cut by as much as a third as part of a deal. He's going to have to give up his challenge to the conviction, and that's going to mean the release of millions of dollars destined to help the people who were the victims of that particular crime. Mark Gregory reports on the background to his case.
Guilty verdicts in the biggest case of corporate fraud in history. Enron's Kenneth Lay and Jeffrey Skilling were once among the most celebrated business leaders in America. Tonight, they are convicted felons. A jury in Houston found them...
Enron was headline news in America on the day its two main bosses were convicted in 2006, just as it had been 5 years earlier when it went bust with a multi-billion dollar fraudulent hole in its accounts. Ken Lay, the former chairman, died weeks before his sentence was due to start. Jeffrey Skilling, famous for his hard-driving management style, lived on as the last remaining arch-villain. As chief executive, he was the man behind the strategy that saw Enron ride the liberalisation of energy markets. The company pioneered trading in complex energy derivatives. At the peak, Enron was America's seventh largest company by stock market value, but it was hiding huge losses with illegal partnership deals that kept losses out of the published accounts. Jeffrey Skilling resigned 6 months before the firm went bust and claimed it wasn't his fault. Here he is appearing before Congress soon after the crash.
Congressman, I can just say it again. On the date I left, I absolutely, unequivocally thought the company was in good shape.
It was not a defense that cut much ice with the courts, the thousands of investors who'd lost money in the Enron collapse, or the company's employees. Nearly 5,000 staff lost their jobs in Enron's hometown of Houston, Texas. Many also saw their pensions disappear, which were invested in the firm. Angelino Lorio was a management assistant. She lost $500,000 in retirement savings when the firm went down.
Oh, I'll always be bitter. That's something I'll never forget until the day I die. You know, it's just that you think that you've, you know, got a good future in your old age and not have to worry about having to work still at 66 years old, pushing 70. It's just been, it's been a nightmare trying to just keep ends meet. You know, we trusted the people above us and we just put all of our eggs into one basket, and that was being a fool, I must admit.
Angelino Lorio ending that report by Mark Gregory. Well, Tom Adjemi is one of the lawyers who represented those who lost money in Enron in the original court case back in 2006. I asked him what he thought of this deal.
This deal is something that's just a sort of a compromise that has to be done. because the government wants to release $40 million that Skilling has refunded to investors, but it's been tied up in a bank account while he continues his appeal process. So by agreeing not to appeal his sentence any longer and stop taking these appeals that have been going on for 7 years now, by stopping that, the government's agreed to this reduced sentence, and now $40 million will get distributed to the investors who lost money.
Do you think that's the right thing to do?
You know, I think it's one of those compromises that just has to be done. I think it's regretful the sentence has been reduced, but I understand the government's perspective, which is they need to get this $40 million that's been tied up while the appeals are going on. They need to get that distributed. Investors need it. And they also need to stop spending resources on the appeals and the legal process and just end that once and for all and bring some finality to the Jeff Skilling saga.
I suppose there'll be people who say, well, you know, someone like him with the financial clout that he's got, he can cut this kind of deal. An awful lot of people can't.
There's no question the system here is favoring the very, very wealthy over the average person. Because he's able to afford lawyers and tie up this case in the courts for many, many years like this, he now has negotiating leverage with the government to have his sentence reduced. The average person clearly could not go through the appeals process as long and afford to pay lawyers.
It is interesting, though, that in recent years particularly, it does seem that the white-collar criminals are getting reasonably substantial sentences. I suppose you think of Bernie Madoff for a start. Do you think the atmosphere is moving much more in that direction?
There have been some long sentences, but I also fear that the immediacy of these of the devastation has kind of passed a bit, and there's a lot of commentary now that many people think that white collar criminals are getting too long, and that the sentencing guidelines ought to be revisited, and perhaps that those sentences ought to be reduced. I think that's really regretful personally, because having represented hundreds of investors who've lost their life savings, you see the devastation this wrecks on families, and just it can destroy lives, of course. So I fear that the people are getting a little bit immune to the financial scams and frauds, and not remembering how real these are, and remembering that we have to keep pushing for very, very long sentences in order to send a message, not just to the criminal, but to other people who are thinking about getting involved in these schemes.
Now, you may be aware, I don't know if you are, but this week in Britain, a banking commission did suggest for the first time, really, that senior banking executives here, if they make a really big mistake, should also be going to jail. I mean, maybe even internationally, the attitude is changing.
I hope so. Yeah, it needs to change. My personal opinion is that we're pretty primitive as how we look at these things, that a bank robber can get a lot longer sentence than someone who destroys a multi-billion dollar company and wipes out the savings of tens of thousands of people. That someone who's got caught with maybe a little bit of a drug on him or her could go to jail for life, while someone else who destroys the life savings of tens of thousands of people might get a 6-year sentence. To me, that's disproportionate.
Tom Adjemi.
Looks like stocks are on their way to ending the week with a 2% loss overall. They're mixed at this point. S&P 500 up slightly, NASDAQ down slightly, Dow Jones up slightly at 14,764. In local news, the latest report on the Horoso fire burning east of Espanola puts it at 3,900 acres. That's just 400 acres more than several days ago. It's inaccessible by road or by foot, so it's being monitored by helicopter. Containment, zero. The Thompson Ridge fire in the Hemis has not grown at all over the past week. It stands at 24,000 acres and is 90% contained. Managers at the Santa Fe National Forest have decided to take no chances with the potential of a human-caused fire. They're closing the entire forest and the Valles Caldera to the public beginning on Monday. The Hyde Memorial State Park north of Santa Fe will close as well, but the New Mexican reports that the city of Santa Fe's Dale Ball urban trails will remain open. Here's an extra minute, then here's an extra guy.
It had been a few years since I had been to Madrid, not really sure why. The drive on US 14 to Madrid from Santa Fe is one of my favorites, at least in New Mexico. It does not, of course, match up to California's 101, the overseas highway to Key West, or the service road that runs alongside the tracks of the Trans-Siberian Railway. The organization, New Mexico Women in Film, was having a little gathering at the Mineshaft Tavern in Madrid. It's a good group that promotes the involvement and profile of New Mexico women in film, all aspects of the process of making movies. At the gathering of the Mineshaft Tavern, there were, here's the important stuff, chips, salsa, beans, rice, chilies, beef, pork, and tamales. By the way, men can join, and I belong to New Mexico Women in Film, but that's only because I look good in a kiln. A kilt. And either way, I'm hot.
Not.
For KSFR, I'm Christopher Hagen.